Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A little later, we'll get a preview of the new polar bear exhibit at the St. Louis Zoo. But first, the U.S. Supreme Court will decide the issue of same-sex marriage later this month. And when it does, the name of Jim Obergefell will figure prominently in that decision. Jim Obergefell is the lead plaintiff in the case. He was in St. Louis yesterday discussing LGBT rights issues with various supporting organizations. I sat down with Jim and with A.J. Bauchelman of PROMO, an LGBT advocacy organization, to talk about the pending Supreme Court ruling. I asked Obergefell about his sense of anticipation over the decision.
Absolutely. And in some ways, I'm really happy our case was heard, the oral arguments were so late in April, because at least that meant it was only 2 months that I had to wait for a decision. But yes, absolutely. June is a very exciting and nervous month for me.
Yeah. Do you have, we talked about having a sense of anticipation. Do you have any kind of vibe, you were at the oral arguments, any kind of vibe at all about what this decision might be?
Honestly, when I was in the courtroom, I tried not to read into anything. I tried not to form an opinion, mainly because I'm not an attorney and I'm certainly not an expert in the legal system or the Supreme Court. So I really just tried to listen to what was being said and keep an open mind. I am optimistic, but I also know that I can't count my chickens, and this court could do something that surprises me. So I'm hopeful, and so many of the things that I read, people who watch the court are hopeful as well. So,
for the benefit of those who are listening who are not totally familiar with what's going on, why don't you just review the basics of your particular case here?
Right. So in 2013, when the Windsor decision was released, I asked my partner—
The Windsor decision being?
Oh, that was when part of DOMA was ruled unconstitutional.
Defense of Marriage Act. DOMA.
Correct. Defense of Marriage Act. So I leaned over to my partner of 20 years at the time and hugged him and kissed him and said, let's get married. And at the time, John, my partner, was dying of ALS, and he was in hospice care at home. So we had to decide, how do we get married? Because we couldn't marry in Ohio. And fortunately, I couldn't just take him 6 blocks in his wheelchair to our county courthouse. So we ended up getting married in a medical jet on the tarmac of Baltimore Washington International Airport. And we made the decision to marry purely because we wanted our relationship to have some legal standing. And that was the sole reason. We got back to Cincinnati, and our story was in the newspaper that weekend, and friends were at a party, and they ran into a friend of theirs who's a civil rights attorney. And we came up in conversation. We heard from our friends asking if we'd be interested in meeting with and talking to the civil rights attorney. We had never thought of doing anything like that. Wasn't on our radar, wasn't something we had ever considered. So we met with him. He pulled out a blank death certificate and said, now guys, do you realize when John dies, the state of Ohio, here in marital status at time of death, they'll put unmarried. And where it says surviving spouse, Jim, your name won't be there. And we were devastated. So we decided to sue the state of Ohio for recognition of our marriage, our lawful marriage, on John's death certificate when that time came.
This is just one piece of the overall case the court is considering, correct?
Correct. Our case was all about recognition of legal out-of-state marriages, and then there was an additional case in Ohio, which was also about recognition, but it had to do with birth certificates. So there are four couples in Ohio who were suing for the right to have their marriage recognized so that their children have accurate birth certificates and have those protections. And then there are cases from Ohio, Michigan, Tennessee, and Kentucky. And it's a mix of the right to marry and the right to have those lawful marriages recognized.
AJ, what does this decision, regardless of which way it goes, mean for Missouri? Because we have kind of a mishmash of court cases now dealing with this.
Well, let's take the positive outcome. If it is, if all the marriage bans around the country are struck down, then effectively we have marriage equality in the state of Missouri. The various cases that have moved forward, there are still two active cases, one that's been appealed to the Missouri Supreme Court, which is effectively on hold. And the second case, which is before the Eighth Circuit, which is also on hold pending the decision from the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court. And effectively, we would have then marriage equality. Missouri already has a very mixed record when it comes to marriage, because effectively, because of the first case out of Kansas City, the Barrier case, which used had roughly 10 couples from around the state recognized, it struck down the ban in the state. And then the second case out of St. Louis, effectively, where Mayor Francis Slay issued supported issuing marriage licenses from the city of St. Louis, we now have marriage moving forward in St. Louis County, and Jackson County, which is Kansas City. And those are fully recognized by the state of Missouri currently. However, we still don't have things such as Social Security benefits, things like that. And I think that the biggest win will be when those more tangible benefits then are extended to same-sex couples. On the converse, right now, quite honestly, I don't even want to speculate on if they don't rule in favor of marriage, what we necessarily are looking at. Because then you have a mixture of states around the country where you have marriage equality that has moved forward, yet if they allow state bans to still remain, then you have an uneven category. There's a gray area for so many couples that don't have marriage extended within their state. And within Missouri, we would still then go forward with those two other appeals.
You know, this whole issue, this whole LGBT issue, it seems to me that the train has left the station. And you just have to wonder if the Supreme Court justices, Jim, I'll direct this to you and also AJ, if the Supreme Court justices weigh public opinion at all, and obviously they have to follow the law as they perceive it, but if they weigh public opinion, what do you think?
I don't know. Just based on being in the courtroom, you know, the whole public opinion came up throughout my case. And even in the Supreme Court, the question was, you know, well, why can't this just be done through the democratic process? And why are we trying to change something that has had this definition for centuries, for millennia? So I think they do think about public opinion. But my hope is that they really come down on the side of equal justice under law. And for me, from that perspective, we're in the right. We deserve the same rights as any other couple. So I think they do listen to public opinion, but I don't know that that's the driving force behind their decisions.
AJ, where do you think we are now as a country on this issue?
We are approaching a tipping point considerably. I think that when it comes to the marriage discussion, when you have any laws that are made based upon targeting out a specific category of individuals, they're subject to certain levels of scrutiny. And if it's found that there's a history of discrimination against those individuals, they're oftentimes a target of discrimination, they don't necessarily have enough of a voting block to win at the ballot consistently. Certainly that's different in a place like California or New York versus a place like Missouri. Then those are subject to what's called heightened scrutiny. And we're approaching a tipping point where sexual orientation, at least, will be held up to that level of scrutiny. As yet, I don't believe there is any federal court that has truly weighed in favor of full heightened scrutiny. And that applies not just sexual orientation as applied to marriage equality, but also with regards to employment, public accommodations, housing, different things like that.
There are still several areas aside from marriage.
Correct.
That need to be worked on. Again, I'll put this to you. And Jim, weigh in if you're familiar. I don't know how familiar you are with what's been happening here in Missouri.
A little bit, but certainly not as familiar or knowledgeable as AJ.
Then talk about some of these issues here vis-a-vis Missouri.
Sure. Well, we certainly have an interesting state, and we have been able to keep some of the really bad stuff from going forward. And when I say bad stuff, for example, just a few years ago, we had a bill trying to keep schools from even talking about sexual orientation in any way, shape, or form. We stopped that from moving forward. This past legislative session, I think we're going to see the beginning of a short wave where you see a lot of anti-gay legislation introduced. Most of them really went nowhere this year. The one that actually did move forward marginally was an effort to allow school districts, public universities, to deny membership to religiously affiliated organizations based solely on their religious affiliation. And I think that's the kind of thing we're going to start to see more of. But then at the same time, you have places like St. Louis and Kansas City that, according to the Human Rights Campaign and their Municipal Equality Index, they score 100% on these indices because they actually have put in pro-equality statements. And we're seeing that movement happen other places around the state.
Jim, what are you seeing? I mean, you're obviously doing a lot of traveling these days. What are you seeing? What kind of attitudinal nuances are you seeing as you travel?
Right. Well, for me, I have seen nothing but an outpouring of support. I've seen very little outright hostility towards me, towards marriage equality. You know, I think of being at the Supreme Court that day, the protesters out front. It was so heavily in favor, represented by the people who are in support of marriage equality and were there to say, we want this. We support these plaintiffs. We want equality in the United States. And even in my city of Cincinnati, there's been a sea change of opinion. And Cincinnati, for years, was considered one of the most unfriendly places in the country for the LGBT community, because we actually had a charter amendment that said no laws can be passed to protect the LGBT community. And that's changed completely. I mean, the city solicitor of Cincinnati stood up in court in the very first hearing on our case to say, Your Honor, we agree with the plaintiffs. We believe that state amendment is unconstitutional, and we will not fight them. So for me, on a very personal level, my home city has seen dramatic changes in support. Now, I absolutely pay attention to a lot of these bills that are being proposed around the country where people are trying to come up with ways to deny us equality because they are concerned that marriage equality is coming to the entire United States. And it's a little frightening to see those types of things, that type of animus out there in our legislatures, in our governing bodies. And it's amazing, and I'm thankful that there are so many organizations that are out there fighting those and helping to prevent those from becoming law. But it is scary to think that they're out there and people will continue to come up with new ideas and ways to fight us.
Do you find differences in urban versus rural areas, for instance, or sections of the country, Midwest versus West Coast, East Coast, that sort of thing?
The big difference I see is primarily between the South and a lot of the rest of the country. The South is where I think there's beliefs and religion are so strong in the South. And to me, that's where I see the vast majority of really organized, really vocal opposition. Absolutely, there are differences between urban areas and rural areas, but the big thing I see is really the South.
AJ, certainly Missouri is a case in point with regard to rural versus urban areas, isn't it?
It is. However, there are two things I would point out that are ways in which you can kind of take a temperature of this, where it is changing. One, I would point to within the legislature even. If you recall, in 2013, we did have a vote on basic protections. That's the Missouri Non-Discrimination Act, extending protections for employment, housing, public accommodations. In the Senate, when that vote came down, it was both the Democrats and then mostly the rural Republican senators that did vote with us on that bill. And then fast forward to just even this past year, we have a partnership with Sage of Metro St. Louis, which we actually have now formalized as they've come on as a part of our 501c3 outreach entity.
Sage being, for those who don't know.
Sorry. Sage is services and advocacy for GLBT elders. Sage Metro St. Louis is now part of Promo Fund. And in the last year, part of the big collaboration we've had is with an LGBT health policy and training initiative. In the last year, the calls for training from hospital facilities and other healthcare entities isn't necessarily just happening from St. Louis or Kansas City. It's happening in Poplar Bluff, Joplin, Hannibal, Cape Girardeau, St. Genevieve. It's outside of our big urban centers where you still have individuals based upon the 2004 marriage vote, we know that we have LGBT individuals living in every county in this state, and they're still going to need access to services.
I'm going to have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back. My guests in studio are Jim Obergefell. He is the lead plaintiff in the Supreme Court same-sex marriage case. Also with me is A.J. Bockelman of PROMO. That's an LGBT rights advocacy group here in St. Louis. We'll continue that conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. As we continue our conversation with Jim Obergefell and A.J. Bockelman, we're talking about the same-sex marriage issue, one that is going to be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in the very near future. And Jim Obergefell is the lead plaintiff in the Supreme Court same-sex marriage case. This is a political season, obviously, at early stages of a political season, but a lot of people involved. I wonder what that's going to do, Jim, to this whole discussion. Do you have any sense of that?
Right now, I do not. I mean, I know it will play a big part, you know, if marriage equality comes to the entire U.S. at the end of the month. I think we all know that it will become a political football yet again, where certain candidates will hold that up as evidence of the decline of American society, while other candidates will hold it up as an example of our country living up to the ideals of the Constitution. So absolutely, it will come into play, and I think we'll continue to see fights back and forth about marriage, but the bigger picture of LGBT equality, period.
I think that one of the big differences, though, that we're seeing now in this political season is that particularly marriage is now a wedge issue for the Democrats to push back against the conservative far-right Republicans. And many Republicans are now coming out in favor of marriage, not as many as we necessarily would like, but you're seeing a distinct difference. And even on the national stage, while we have some of the presidential candidates certainly playing into it, many of the candidates right now are also trying to avoid those conversations, at least on the right side of the spectrum.
Well, that's probably a good sign for you.
Yes.
For both of you, if they're trying to back away from this. Is there any way, do you think, and again, none of us here, as far as I know, are attorneys, any way that the court can rule in such a way that you can get a partial victory in this thing, a partial defeat, and so that it's not fully resolved? Do you, any of you see that as a possibility?
I mean, I guess it is a possibility that they could rule against the right to marry, but they could rule that the recognition of lawful out-of-state marriages has to happen. That is a possibility, but I don't know how likely that is. Again, I'm not an attorney, so it's hard for me to have a good opinion on that.
And again, I'm not an attorney. However, my understanding is that there could be still the possibility that they would rule that marriage equality is fine for the states that have already passed it or have done through some other action, whether it's judicial, legislative, or by voter action, where and still leave it to some states to decide how they move forward. However, the likelihood of that is not as high, given that it would still leave so many people in a very gray area. Even if we go back to something historically, Loving v. Virginia and interracial marriage, by that point in time, judicial action or state legislative action had moved to the point where you only had, I believe, 16 states that still had anti-miscegenation laws on the books.
Hmm. What are the numbers now with regard to states that are in favor of same-sex marriage and those that are not? I'm sorry to do this. Numbers.
I can't remember.
If I recall correctly, it's legal. It's same-sex marriage is recognized in 37 states or allowed in 37 states.
That sounds about right. Jim, there's a possibility with this decision, well, the probability of this decision, that your name is going to get down in history along with Roe and Roe v. Wade and Brown versus Board of Education. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, you could you could be on the law books for a long, long time.
I'm still trying to get used to that. It doesn't seem possible, especially because I think back to when John and I made this decision to file suit. It was a very personal decision. It was about our relationship. It was about us. It was about our marriage. Yes, knowing that it also would have an impact on other couples like us, it's really difficult for me to picture my name showing up in a history book. It does make me chuckle to think about attorneys and law students going forward having to know how to say my name and spell it.
Obergefell, right? That's that close?
Very close. Obergefell.
Obergefell. Yes. Sorry.
So, no need to apologize. So it's surreal for me. But it's also a good feeling because, you know, I've done this for my husband. I've done this for our relationship. And I think what a great legacy for him, for us, to be able to have had an impact far beyond our relationship, our city, and our state.
Another legacy of sorts, I'll digress just partially here, is something you wear on your ring, wear on your finger, your wedding ring. Tell us about that.
Correct. When John died, a good friend said, well, Jim, why don't you go to a jeweler and see if the jeweler can do something with John's wedding ring and some of his ashes? So I went to a jeweler who was a high school friend of John's, and the jeweler had this great idea. He said, why don't we fuse the two rings together? And then on the inside of the now single ring, he cut a channel to hold some of John's ashes. So John is with me all of the time, physically and in my heart and in my thoughts.
How long were you together before he passed away?
We were together almost 21 years when he died.
It's a long relationship.
It is.
A long relationship. I'll digress again because this is so much in the news lately and be interested in getting your take on this. And AJ, I'll take it to you. And that is the issue of Caitlyn Jenner, which is getting so much attention these days. And I wonder if you think that this is a good thing for the cause, if you will, or maybe not so good.
Oh, 100%, it's a good thing. It's a great thing. Anytime that we're talking about individuals who are gender nonconforming, transgender individuals, and we're doing more to do public education about those types of issues and the experience of those individuals, it's important. Even this morning at the gym, I heard a couple of guys talking about it, and they made a couple of offhanded remarks, but when we talked about it more in depth, and they walked away with a little bit of a different opinion after discussing what it means to be an individual who is transgender. Caitlin has a different world experience than many of us, certainly lived a very public profile for many years. And the reality is for many trans individuals, they don't have access to basic jobs. It's very difficult for them to make even a basic living.
Some people have criticized this whole thing as being a little bit too public, a little bit too showbiz, and that somehow has tainted the reality of her situation.
Well, I think certainly it should be noted that the Kardashians are very much a part of it.
there we go. Jim, what are your thoughts about that?
My thought is, bravo for Caitlin. I think she is just another example, another demonstration of how we change our country for the better. And that is simply by being willing to share who you are and be open and honest about that. It's by telling our stories that we suddenly take the LGBT community from being this abstract, scary thing for other people to letting them realize and learn that we are, for the most part, just like every other person. And Caitlin is giving our transgender brothers and sisters a vitally needed voice and that image and a story. And she's helping take away the mystery. And I think it's a great thing.
A lot of people, however, are snickering about this. And I can't imagine that would be helpful.
Well, no. But, you know, for a lot of my life, people snickered about me. And that comes with the territory when you're willing to share yourself and be open and honest. Attitudes take time to change. And Caitlin is helping educate people. And my hope is that one day soon, those snickers die away. There will always be people who will snicker. We'll never lose that. But in the bigger sense and in the broader sense, Caitlin, John and I, everyone in the LGBT community who is open, they're helping change our country for the better. And we have to be happy about that.
What, AJ, what about this snickering quotient in this?
Unfortunately, I think that I would be stupid to say that people are not having a laugh. Unfortunately, even in my own experience in working with corporate entities around the region that have, you know, LGBT affinity groups, you know, many of the employees still admit that whenever walking in the Pride Parade is brought up at a larger conversation amongst the employees, they'll hear snickers, they'll hear commentary about that. So we're not quite, as I said, we're at a tipping point on many issues, but certainly the communities, all of our communities need a lot more education. And this includes even within the LGBT community about transgender issues and being more inclusive.
Where are we today as opposed to 10 years ago? I mean, how much of this has this whole movement advanced?
Overall LGBT?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that we've come light years. Well, you know, we've really moved so quickly relative to other social justice issues when we look back through history. However, even borrowing from other social justice issues, as we've seen in our own backyard with Ferguson-related and race issues, that we've not necessarily moved all the way to full equity and justice that we need. I do believe that the Windsor decision 2 years ago, and I've said this before on the show, that one of the things that helped move marriage further was that it was only a partial victory for us on marriage. When you looked at it at the surface, the conversation up until that point had been about love and commitment. And whenever the Windsor decision came down and suddenly you had this wide variance in states that had protections and had full marriage equality and then states that didn't, you had this have and have not. And suddenly it became about extending Department of Immigration and Naturalization citizenship allowances to couples that maybe were legally married from another state but resided in Missouri. It became about those tangible benefits of survivor benefits, Social Security, health care, all these different pieces that every other couple takes for advantage.
And could understand.
Yes.
That was a big part of it, was being able to understand those kinds of things. Jim, your thoughts about where we are now compared to some years ago?
It's amazing. John and I never thought we would see marriage equality or the ability for us to get married in our lifetimes. So the fact that we were able to marry and marry knowing our federal government would acknowledge it was unbelievable. And AJ makes me think of something that was a big part of our story that I think people could relate to. You know, John's grandparents bought a plot in a cemetery in Cincinnati. And one of the provisions they put on that was that only direct descendants and their legally married spouses could be buried or memorialized on that plot. Well, what that meant was that John and I can't be there together. We were together in life for almost 21 years, and yet these state constitutional amendments meant that I couldn't be beside him when I die. Mm. And that really connected with people. It was one of those concrete things. It was no longer abstract. It was something people could relate to and put themselves in our place. And I think that's had a huge change. That's been a big part of the change over the past 10 years. Again, people are suddenly realizing we're not that different. We can relate to what they're going through.
What a rush of thoughts, again, taking you back to the oral arguments at the Supreme Court, what a rush of thoughts that must have been going through your mind as you're watching this discussion unfold.
Well, honestly, sitting there, I was trying not to think too much. I was really just listening to what was happening and thinking about my husband. And I was lucky enough to have his Aunt Paulette sitting next to me. She's the one who married us. And it was just thinking about John and thinking about what our marriage meant and what our commitments meant to each other and hoping that in that courtroom a decision would be reached that said, yes, you guys are the same. You deserve the same rights as everyone else. So there absolutely a lot of thoughts, a lot of feelings, but a lot of it was just thinking about my husband.
We had talked earlier about the sense of theater. And I'd just like to get your take on that on the record, because the Supreme Court oral arguments and much of what the court does is theater, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Sitting in that courtroom, it was amazing when a buzzer went off and suddenly all of these dark red drapes with gold fringe were pulled back in unison and there stood the nine justices. It was just this sense of theater and of a production. It was really interesting to experience that. And with the fact that, you know, they don't let us really know when things are happening, it's more of a theatrical event because we don't know when it'll happen. We don't know exactly what will happen. So it's that sense of uncertainty and excitement and theater. It's pretty amazing.
AJ, you get that impression from afar?
Certainly from afar. I wasn't able to be out there for the ceremony of it all, but certainly even outside the court, it seemed like there was a lot of theater that took place as well.
Absolutely.
One other issue I'd just like to get your impressions on, that's the federal non-discrimination law that's being talked about. Where are we with that? I must confess I don't know.
So I actually was just inquiring of some of the Human Rights Campaign folks that were in town. Currently, as we had moved forward before, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act had been the key vehicle that we had pinned hopes on getting basic mm-hmm. employment protections. However, in the wake of all the religious liberty discussions, that bill contains some pretty broad exemptions. The Human Rights Campaign and other allies at the national level have taken a step back, and they're anticipating introducing more of an omnibus bill that covers LGBT issues more broadly. So perhaps some issues around public accommodations, protections for housing, fair credit, other types of pieces. We anticipate that to be dropped sometime yet this summer, hopefully even before the before the decision comes down before the Supreme Court.
Well, that brings politics back into it again, doesn't it, Jim? And it would require legislation, obviously. It would require some sort of congressional action. And Congress these days is not known for its speed with which it does anything, or in fact even doing anything to a very large degree.
Correct, unfortunately. So I'm excited that the bill will be introduced. And as a gay American, it's encouraging and it's hopeful that that is happening. But as you say, I'm not sure how it will move. I worry that it'll just languish and die. I hope not, because I really do want all Americans to be treated equally. And that's what our Constitution says. And the fact that we're born gay, lesbian, transgender, We should enjoy the same protections that every other American does.
Jim Obergefell and A.J. Bockelman discussing the issue of same-sex marriage and the pending Supreme Court decision on the issue. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.